Just happen by chance. As long as my God holds the world in his hands, I know that there's no such thing as unplanned.
Greetings and welcome back to another episode of Livestream, your weekly dose of life. And yes, this is Vaughn, aka the Cyber Hitchhiker, back in studio. And this week we have two very special guests in studio. We have a husband and wife couple, Dr. T.V. Thomas and his wife Mary, and we will get them to tell you a little bit more about themselves a little bit later, but they have come from all across the globe, various countries, various nations, all people groups, and we are speaking about specifically here displaced people groups, but we are going to get them to tell you exactly what they do and where their heart lies, and that is really for discipleship and for furthering the Word of God using the Great Commission, as Jesus said, going out into all nations, all people groups, and teaching them about God and helping them to understand God. But that is not the be-all and end-all of what they do. They are involved with various community-based projects in various communities, and we will get Mary to discuss what she does in Canada, locally in her area, with all the displaced people groups that are there, and obviously with Dr. Thomas, everything that he does on a local as well as international scale. So, welcome, Dr. Thomas.
Well, thank you to be here in South Africa. This is not my first time that I've come in here. But this time I've come for a great consultation we had last week in Cape Town, called the Cape Town Diaspora Consultation. I'll tell you more about that. Originally, I come from Malaysia. I've studied in India, Canada, U.S., and presently based in Canada. I'm an evangelist by calling. But I'm also a mobilizer. I've also done 20 years of teaching at a seminary at a bachelor's, master's, and doctoral levels. And presently, I'm into a great time mobilizing the leaders and churches and agencies for the sake of the kingdom.
Right, and that is Dr. Thomas being very short and brief about everything that he does. And listen, I'm looking at his bio, and I could go on and on about how many boards Dr. Thomas is on and all the work that he does, but those things aren't really the most important thing. And just chatting to this amazing couple in the car on the way here to studio, I caught a little bit of their heart, and their heart is for people. Mary, a little bit more about what you do as a wife, and also in your local area in Canada. You were touching on a few things in the car that you are involved with, and I could see your passion for displaced people groups. So give our listeners a little bit of insight into what you are doing in Canada at the moment.
Thank you. I'm Mary Thomas. I am from India, but I live in Canada. I've lived for the last 40 years in Canada, and I'm a teacher by profession. I teach grade 11, 12, physics, chemistry, biology, and I enjoyed my students. And I also love people. I'm involved in women's ministries. I like to speak to women and minister to them, spend time with them. And one of the things that have come recently for the last few years has been spending time with the refugees. And we do have quite a few Syrians, Afghanis, and some other displaced people groups in the city, and I do spend time with them.
Right, so when we are talking about displaced people groups in the city, we are talking about refugees that are fleeing their homeland and coming through to Canada seeking refuge, for lack of a better term. Yeah. How difficult is it for them to integrate?
It is pretty difficult because many of them don't have the language, and that's a major issue. So what we do is try to teach them, try to give them classes in English. Even adults, the government does some programs. We also do as a community project. We, as church-based project, we invite people to come to classes and teach them English and talk to them. And also some students, we help them with their subjects in school and those kind of things. Yeah.
Doctor, you want to say something?
Yeah, one of the things that we have done, say, the Syrians who have been with us the last four and a half years, We have seen the Syrians responding because we, as a team of about 28, have reached out to them as friends of Syrians. We come from different churches, but we formed this umbrella small network called Friends of Syrians. And we have tried to help them at their point of need. And so, for example, we have not only English being taught with the adults, but there is couples committed to visiting homes twice a week to help their kids with their homework. So right when they come from school, from 4 to 6, somebody comes, the same person's couple comes to help them with their homework so that they can catch up, because they have to catch up not only linguistically, academically, culturally, trying to help them to navigate the early months of being in Canada. So that's been very effective. I think there's been also opportunities to take them on excursions, on trips, to see the farm country, because we live in around lots of wheat fields and sunflowers and many other things are grown, and to take them to a farm to see how big these farms are. Our farms, having a 640-acre farm is a small farm in Canada. You need to have 3,000-4,000 acres to make it a go. And to take them there, to help them see the different crops, to help them see the equipment, the size of the equipment, whether it's tractors or harvesters or whatever, just blows their mind.
I can imagine.
In the whole conversation, going out 40, 45 miles out to visit a farm and having a picnic with them, and then showing them the different kinds of crops, all these makes them feel this is a country that they can survive and even thrive if they make. So we have many of them are Muslims background, many come from other backgrounds, and we are able to communicate the love of Christ in a very tangible way. We got friends who bring lentils from some of the farms and provide them almost every week, all kinds of ways. We have a team that took the men to have Syrians, because they were 4 or 5 years in refugee camps in different parts of Europe. Many of them had root canal problems. So we have doctors, Christian doctors, who have volunteered to give a Saturday once a month, and we help bring them there, sit with them, go through the process, and then take them home. All those are very tangible, practical ways, helping them, learning, teaching them how to drive cars, opening a bank account, showing them shopping. Mary takes them shopping on how to buy the right warm clothes. Some things may look warm, but may not allow you to survive. So you show them why you buy and how it's going to affect. It's better to buy one or two that's very good clothes than to buy a whole bunch which will not serve in the deepest of the winter.
Let me add here. I remember taking a Syrian lady for shopping. Now, she didn't speak one word of English. I don't speak their language either. That's where the Google Translators come in. So we use that and help each other out.
So let me just ask you quickly, does Google Translate actually work well?
It actually works well.
Guys, Google Translate works.
And we also have supper nights. And now the supper nights are Syrians, supper nights are Afghanis. And so this is the time we get to know them and get to know their needs, and they invite us to their homes, usually have sit down, talk over a cup of Afghani tea, and find out what do they need. When I go to these homes, I find out some homes don't have even a dining table.
Sure.
Now, some homes don't have couches. They don't have necessary things in the house. So what I do personally is I send an email to churches. Having lived there for 40 years or so, kind of at least the evangelical churches know me, and I send them an email and say, can you bless this people? And I have to say many of them respond to me. and say, we have a couch in the garage. We have a dining table. We are not using it. And some people, even I go talk to the senior citizens who are going into nursing homes, and I say, of course, you have so much. You're going to nursing home. Can you bless some families with what you have? And I have to say they do. And so sometimes they give me from room to the television and say, this is all for you. Go bless the families. And I have gone and collected these things and given to many families. So people have been very good. The church has been responding pretty good. And I'm so, so grateful to them.
Now, and it takes a lot of coordination. You know, it's not just we may get the couch, but how do you get the couch to the apartment, which correct. Is on the third floor of the complex, right? So you need to get somebody who has half-ton truck. Somebody, and the right number of people to carry that thing up the stairs, if there's no elevators, up the stairs and put it and place it. But you also have to have that other person be there if they're working part-time and they don't have personal transportation. They're coming back depends upon how they get the right bus or whatever to come back. So all that has to be factored just to move one or two items that are given with good faith. But to get it to the place takes a lot of coordination. Mary's on the phone all the time trying to make sure, are you going to be there? And then she goes there because nobody knows. All the others do not know the home that it's giving. So she goes, becomes the face. Supervises the transportation, and then she goes to the other place because the recipient, who is the immigrant or the refugee, needs to know this is coming from us or through us. And so all kinds of coordination, sometimes it's a 3-hour operation just to make sure that thing is delivered on time. And there's someone to open the door to let the stuff in. It's a lot of coordination. She spends hours.
Time factor is a major thing. Now, for a Canadian, 6:30 is 6:29.
That's not how it works in
that's
Africa.
That's how it works in Canada. Now, somebody coming from outside, 6:29, 6:30, maybe 7:30. And so I just want to make sure that nobody is hurt in the process.
Very
so
important.
I'm usually the middle person just to coordinate, tell them to be on time, and people do respond. I've been so grateful.
But yeah. She calls them and reminds them, you know, what time are you going to be there? 7:30, okay? 6:30. Come 5 minutes earlier. And it's a lot trying to teach them culture and the values of this new society they are coming in. And they have to function. They can't function the way they did at home if they want to navigate life. And so it's very practical things.
Now this, before you carry on there, Mary, this sounds very familiar to me if I'm listening to the way you guys are talking, and I also see the passion and the excitement on your faces. It's infectious because you would normally, if I'm listening to you talk, this is intense stuff that we're talking about here. It's intense preparation, planning, getting the right people in the right places at the right times, but yet you are doing it with such passion and such love. Acts 2:42 comes to mind when we speak about devotion to the teachings, devotion to fellowship, devotion to breaking bread, and devotion to one another. It's discipleship. It's taking ownership and being in it for the good and the bad, the comfortable, the uncomfortable. Mary, you were going to say something.
And I was going to say, as we said earlier, it was Gandhi who said, even God cannot speak to a starving man except in terms of bread. That's the principle.
Correct.
So we give them bread and introduce them to the bread of life.
Did Jesus not do the same thing, though? Did he not feed the masses before he spoke to them?
And so what I do is, after helping them, usually I pray silently in that house. I don't pray openly. I don't pray loud. I just pray, Lord, these are the people who are created in the image of God. These are the people who need you. And you died for them. You redeemed them. They need you. So I pray a silent prayer that their eyes will be open to see who Jesus is.
I just want to remind our listeners why Mary is saying silent prayers. Because you must understand, we are not talking about Christians rubbing shoulders with Christians yet. We are talking about Christians going to the places Jesus went to and associating with non-believers, with the Hindus, with the Muslims, with all the guys that might not share the same faith or point of view as us, but you guys don't force the point of view on them. You are there just to serve.
Right.
Yeah, I don't. I don't talk anything about Jesus at that point. I just help them. I am there to help them.
So they have to see Jesus in your
they
life.
They have to see Jesus.
Yeah, not only that. When they see that we from an Asian background and somebody is from the African background, somebody is from the Canadian background, German background, and all of us doing the same thing, sooner or later they'll say, how come you do this?
Yes.
You know, our own people don't do this. And yet you do this. Then one person said, I never knew Christians help Muslims. He said, no, we are supposed to help everybody. You're a human being. You're in need. We try to meet the need. And we show because we love Jesus, but we also love you. And Jesus loves you, so he's sending us to you. And so it becomes very, the bridges are built over time. And easy to talk. They know we're not trying to push anything. So one of the things I teach over the years, I've taught people in evangelism, especially relational evangelism, is we're not called to impose the gospel. We're called to expose the gospel.
Sure. Can we just say that again, Doctor, please?
Yeah. You know, we're called to expose the gospel, not impose the gospel. When you expose it, you must make it attractive. And so when Jesus says, you are the salt, you are the light, those are all exposure things. They are penetrating because of what it is. Salt penetrates because it is salt. Light penetrates because it's light. And so, and the penetration is powerful. Powerful. So it's not manipulating, not orchestrating. Just serve with an open mind, and opportunities will come. Very easy. You know, there are among the Syrians, and now we did that with the Afghans who just came this year. We did a welcome to Canada night for the Afghans. We had maybe about 40-some Afghans, the early arrivals. We did a night for them. We picked them up from their homes. We invited them to a neutral place. We talked about a little bit of the history of Canada. We talked about some of the traditions that they will come across down the line. And then we shared a meal together that we were sensitive to their culture and their faith. And spent a wonderful four-hour experience. And now they feel, oh, I saw you at the welcome thing, right? So it just continues. It's not put on. There's no master orchestration. We just want to love people the way they are. And so grateful. They were so grateful. They could not believe within 2 or 3 weeks of their arrival, we had put this thing together, and they were so grateful.
Now I'm shocked listening to everything that you guys are doing over there. And the only reason why I'm shocked is because, and I'm sure there's listeners that are listening, going, "But Vaughan, this is Canada we're talking about." When we look at the main headline news and we see the Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and all of the progressive stuff that's going on in Canada and how they're just trying to change everything from Christ-centric to human-centric, where we are looking at worldviews here. How is it possible that we've got this happening inside Canada with you guys doing everything that you are doing?
You know, we as Christians are just called to penetrate. Regardless of who is sitting on Pharaoh's throne.
Correct.
Right? We are here to penetrate. Systems come and systems go. Leaders come and leaders go. The church has to be the church. I believe the church, when the church acts, be the church and act like the church, there's no other agency in the world that can match it.
So you don't have any problems with the Canadian government doing what
you're doing? They, as long as they don't interfere with me, right? And I'm
correct.
Not telling them either.
No. Correct. They are very happy we are going and looking after this refugees.
Oh, yes.
They are happy about it. And as we get to know them, we also open our homes.
Yes.
Not only we open our hearts, we open our homes, and hospitality is very much important. As he said, hospitality is not to make an impression, it's just to share what you have with them. And as you open your homes, open your hearts, you have deeper relationships.
So do you think that the church of today as a whole is missing this aspect?
Right. I would say, you know, and I've said this not just in churches, but I've said it in many missiological things. Hospitality has to be regained by the church.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the society is ready for it. The world is ready for it. The person who is struggling, coming as an immigrant, the person who is in a new place as an international student, he doesn't know how to navigate. He has got great aspirations to finish his degree, but he has lost all his network of family and friends, and they've come as an international student at the local university. We need to be that family for them. We need to be that this thing. It doesn't matter what their faith is. And so hundreds of international students can be impacted. If Christians would, we don't have to reach everybody, we just are called to reach some.
Correct.
We're just reaching some, you know, there's lots more. But we team up together and we are reaching quite a bit, right? So it's not just T.V. Thomas and Mary Thomas, we are with the team, you know, we are with the group that is working. So when it's important for them to see, regardless of culture, age, gender, and all that, you have one thing in common. You have the genuine love to make them succeed and thrive.
Isn't that exactly why Jesus died for all of us who are not Christians or good people?
Right, precisely.
So we are supposed to do the same in our actions. I believe, for me personally, when I hear people say, but Vaughan, we are supposed to do greater things than Jesus, a lot of people go, that means we need to do bigger miracles. It's not. If Jesus was willing to take up his cross and die, then for me, doing greater things than Jesus would be to at least start off my Christian walk with going, Jesus was in ministry 3 years full time.
Right.
He spoke the word to thousands of people, but he only had 12 converts at the end of the day.
Right.
If I can just get 12 converts in the first 3 years of being a Christian, I'm doing what Jesus did.
Right.
And anything more than that is starting to get greater. So the greater things for me is all about souls.
But the greater is not just the greater in magnitude. It's also the widespread and the longitudinal view of greater. I've got more years to do this because God has given me a life.
Correct.
I've got more opportunities. You know, Jesus hardly left Palestine. You know, I get to go, you know, to Thailand. I get to go to make this happen. We have got media to communicate, right?
Greater things.
These are all greater ways that we have never thought, say, 30 years ago, we're able to do today. So I'm a firm believer that the church needs to be mobilized to the people on the move, you know, presently, as I said, we came here to Cape Town to do the Cape Town Diaspora Consultation.
Tell us a little bit more about
this. We were here. We had 100, roughly 100 from 30 countries. We do this once every year across the world, different focus. So this year, we came to South Africa, to Cape Town. Our theme was Africans in Diaspora, Africans who are moving out of Africa. And then we're also talking about diasporas in Africa, people who are coming in for business and everything else. The Chinese, the Koreans, the Indians who have been here for a long time. So we are talking about how does the church address these two powerful moving forces. You see, many African Christians have gone out of Africa and making an impact. The largest church in London is led by an African. The largest church led by somebody in Tashkent is an African. Many, many churches. You know, England has never known of a church more than 2,000 or 3,000. Here is a church of 14,000. Right? Blows the British mind that this is even possible. The Caribbeans have come in and have blown them out of the water because of the church. So we were trying to, we are wrestling with issues dealing with that. So we had 15 papers for this consultation, and they were presented by well-researched individuals who are specialized in that area. We also did discussion of the paper and to give critique to the author of the paper, so that when the paper is finally re-edited, it will contain the input of others. So every paper was critiqued and feedback given. We have collected the feedback. So the next 4 or 5 months, we'll be giving it back to the presenters. In the next week or so, we'll give back to the presenters, and they will re-edit their paper, reflecting what they've got. And then that will be put into a volume. So the Global Diaspora Movement of the Lausanne Movement has been producing volumes, textbooks on diaspora missiology. Missiology talking about people on the move, whether by force or volunteer or students or diplomats, how do we reach people who are away? One statement I often make, in the book of Acts, most of the people came to Christ away from home. So there's something that happens when you leave home.
Yes.
And you get a good opportunity to rethink your faith, reevaluate what you have grown up with, be free from all the expectation of family or rituals, rethink, and Christ becomes can be introduced, and they will then say, I look at Christ differently now. You know, I can boldly approach or boldly read, boldly connect with people to explore who Jesus is. And so our mobilization, so we have now about 280 million people who are living and working outside their point of origin, right? Plus the displaced people within their countries. And we expect it'll grow to 350 million by 2030. So this is a target group that was not focused on 20 years ago.
Yes.
So the Global Diaspora Movement under Lausanne is trying to challenge churches to look at the new people in your neighborhood.
Now, the Lausanne Movement, it's got its roots as far back as the 70s.
74. 74. Dr. Billy Graham, along with John Stott, who was Anglican priest of the Anglican Church, both pulled the thing together, and there was a covenant document made called the Lausanne Covenant for World Evangelization. So 2,700 leaders from about maybe 140 countries came together and signed that document. That document has been well received by the wider church. It is not sectarian, it's not denominational, it is the what do we commonly believe in and what do we have to do together. It's a wonderful document, but that movement is reaching 50 years in 2024. But it has galvanized believers to come together and focus on different things, not just diaspora people, the people on the move, but on many other things. So I give leadership to that as chairman of the network, and we got a lot of things. So I personally relate to 43 language groups that worship every Sunday across Canada, and give consulting, help them to see how do they do church planting, how they address second generation issues, how do they find a place to worship, how to be under the same roof with other churches and live amicably, right? And negotiate with the heritage churches to give them, charge them less because they're earning less and they need survival time before they can thrive.
This is just so much stuff, and I'm trying to go, but Doctor, you do all of this stuff internationally, but when I hear about the stuff you do locally, it's so much stuff there as well. you guys obviously have raised good kids in between all of this. Mary, tell us a little bit about your children, just so that our viewers can, or our listeners can get a little bit of the family dynamic that goes on behind the scenes.
We have three children. Victor is our oldest, and he is currently the CEO president for Canada-India Business Council. And what he does is he facilitates the trade between Canada and India, India and Canada and provinces and wow. India and all that.
And this is a Christian placed in this position.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And he is, prematurely placed there from our vantage point. But God has placed him, you know, that he took over from a person who was over 60.
And he loves the Lord. And Christ is first in his life, and he married a girl who is an MP, Member of Parliament in the Canadian government, and she loves the Lord. And so we are so thankful to both of them. Then our oldest daughter, Molly, she is a television broadcaster. She's in charge of, not in charge, she does work for something called W5 as an investigative reporter. So she thoroughly enjoys her job. And
I just want to say, W5 is the oldest program on Canadian TV.
Wow.
It is investigative. It's 60 minutes. It's the equivalent to the U.S. 60 minutes, which copied the format from W5. It's 2 years younger. And to get into W5, you need to put in about 25 years of TV work. And she got in after 10. And
wow.
She was selected. Yeah.
Wow.
And she loves the Lord. And she wants Christ to be known.
And she's the worship leader as well.
She sings. She's a worship leader. And our youngest girl, Melanie, is a lawyer by profession. And she she is actually the vice president for Community Foundations of Canada. And she loves the Lord. And she wants Christ to be known. So we are so grateful for our kids who are living what God wants them to do in their lives. And they all live in Canada. And God is, all I can say as a mother or as parents, is God has raised them up and given them places where they can display His grace and His beauty.
Yeah, all three of them have national platforms.
Yeah.
And all three of them are very bold about their faith. Their workplace knows where they stand. And we are so proud. And they're very involved with a lot of non-Christians, reaching them, Bible studies. We just are so thankful.
Right, well, we have come to the end of our first part with Dr. T.V. Thomas and his wife, and I hope you guys have been enjoying the discussion as much as I have. Make sure you stay tuned to Good News Community Radio, the station that brings you hope, and to live stream your weekly dose of life that comes at you every Monday, 4:30 to 5. We will be back next week with part two of this in-depth discussion regarding global evangelism, specifically relating to displaced people groups and how we as our local communities and churches can be more available through our actions and the various projects that we're involved with by being inclusive. And as you hear Mary and Dr. Thomas talking about how they use the facilities and their know-how to be a blessing to those immigrants and refugees in Canada and around the world, starting locally in their local neighborhood and then obviously reaching out through all the various conferences that they have across the globe. Stay tuned for part two of this discussion next week, only on Good News Community Radio. But that is the end of our time for today, and this is Vaughn, a.k.a. The Cyber Hitchhiker, saying, from Livestream, your weekly dose of life, until we meet on the airwaves, goodbye, and God bless.
Oh, I don't believe in accidents. Miracles, they don't just happen by chance.